there's a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, it's a Throwback Thursday. It is 1993. We go back to television shows of 93 because on this date, Cheers ended its 11-year run on NBC, one of the highest-rated season finales of all time, second behind MASH. PGA Championship underway. A Kiawah Island Golf Resort. Ryan Ballinger joins us to talk about that, as well as what you can expect of these next four rounds as we take a look at the PGA Championship. How are you, Ryan?
Good, Tony. How are you?
Good. All right. What is the weather like? What's the weather going to be like? What's the prediction as we look at this ocean golf course?
It's pretty pleasant. It's supposed to be 75 to 80 degrees throughout the next 4 days of competition. The wind should come out of the eastern direction for the first 3 days as predicted, which means the final six holes of the golf course, which are already difficult as it is, should play even harder. And then on Wednesday, we'll get a Sunday, we'll get a reversal of wind out of the west. And that should make the golf course play completely differently for Sunday. So there will be a little bit of drama attached to the final round, regardless of where we are in the tournament Saturday night.
All right. This is one of the longest majors, if not the longest majors, at over 7,800 yards. Are we at that point where there's a portion of the field that will not be competitive because of that?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, it's 78-76. It's the longest scorecard, at least in the history of majors. I don't think they're ever going to get to that number. They don't really have any intention of doing that. They just want some kind of accessibility in terms of what they can do with a setup. But you're still going to probably play at some point 7,800 yards this week, and that's pretty crazy. And, yes, that is going to basically price out a whole bunch of players in terms of average second shot distance. I mean, not just the 20-club professionals who really have no chance of making the cut, but also a lot of high-quality professional golfers that got in this field. This is the deepest major championship field of the year. The top 100 in the world get in this field. Someone like Zach Johnson is going to be hitting three woods into a lot of these par fours, especially down the stretch if they're playing into the wind. For the longer-hitting, younger guys, they're hitting five irons and four irons into some holes. So this is going to be a very difficult test for everybody. It's going to be different than what they're used to.
Is this a kind, because of the near the ocean, kind of differentiate between a Lynx golf course that we see in the British Open and a United States golf tournament that's played near the ocean? Are they similar? Is it a similar style? How do they differentiate between what we see here and what we see over there?
Yeah, there's an influence here for certain. I mean, the Pete Dye and his wife Alice Dye, who designed this course 30 years ago, they thought about the ocean course with what you see overseas in mind. Now, they don't have exactly the same soil. They don't have exactly the same grass. We've got paspalum here, which is kind of a tropical grass. They usually have fescue overseas, which is a little bit firmer, a little more finer grass. So that's a little bit of a difference. But the routing is very similar to what you see in a lot of those oceanside courses or seaside courses overseas, where you have a kind of an out-and-back approach. So there is a figure-eight look to this golf course. If you look at it from overhead. 10 holes are on the ocean. That's the most in North America, but it goes out, kind of forms that eight, comes back and forms the eight to finish the golf round. So you play 10 holes into the prevailing wind, and then you play eight holes against it or with it, depending on how it's blowing that day. So what they tried to do was to create a course that, while very difficult, also gave you opportunities to score. It wasn't like you were playing into the wind all day and asking a really difficult question over and over again. They wanted to give you an opportunity to try to score, and that's what the PGA of America is going to try to do with the holes that are playing downwind, depending on the wind each day.
Ryan Ballinger joining us of GolfNewsNet.com on our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Well, this is the one question I sort of ask all the time about the PGA Championship, where when you get the Masters, it's the iconic golf course. When you get the British Open, it's the location and the elements and the weather. The U.S. Open, trying to keep it close to par. Is there a defining characteristic that the PGA tries to do, that tries to sort of say, this is how we kind of have our, this is how we want to have our tournament identified?
I think they've tried for so long to try to find an identifier as easy as the other three majors have it, and they just don't have one. It's kind of hard for them to differentiate themselves. I think that was why they made this move to May, in hoping that by being the second major, there would be some more prestige attached to it, because it wasn't the last one. If you're going to win the Grand Slam, you got to win the PGA. Well, that's second. Great. That's kind of what they're hoping the defining characteristic is right now. But from a setup perspective, it is probably the most fair of the four majors. It's the one that's most like a PGA Tour event. And I think the PGA of America is very cognizant of that. But I think their defining characteristic truly is they have the deepest field, at least of the top 100 players, compared to any other major. I mean, the Masters has the fewest players. They had 96. Well, there are 100, all 100 of the top 100 that are available. They're in the field this week. They get invited, and they take a lot of pride in having the deepest field in major championship golf. But most people don't talk about that or recognize it because they really only care about 20 or 30 players at the end of the day.
All right, let's get to some players that should be in contention, or at least we think should be in contention. Dustin Johnson didn't play well at the Masters, but is a South Carolina guy. He can win when he turns it on. Has he shown any signs that he is turning it on?
No, not really. He's kind of in this mini slump for Dustin Johnson. I mean, it's not like he's missing cuts left, right, and center, but his last five tournaments have not been up to the measure of what we saw from him, particularly in the summer and fall last year. Just kind of what we've grown accustomed from him. It seems like at times he puts it together and then it doesn't stay together for four rounds. But Dustin Johnson doesn't stay down for very long, and the market's kind of bet him down a little bit. So I do find it interesting that he kind of went off in the 14-1 range when not but 6-7 weeks ago he was going off in tournaments at 8-1. So I think this is kind of a buy-low opportunity. I love his chances on this golf course. He's still as long as everybody else, very comfortable in pretty much any set of conditions. And he's done well in Pete Dye golf courses in the past.
Let's get to Jordan Spieth, because this is, again, a big question, because he's going for the career Grand Slam, and very, very few people have done it. He seems to have his game back, but then there are times where I see him on the leaderboard, and then a day later I don't see him on the leaderboard anymore. What's his game like right now?
Playing great. T3 at the Masters, T9 last week at the Nelson, on two very, very different golf courses. So I think what Spieth has done very well this year in getting back to who he is accepting who he is. I think he spent 3 years out in the wilderness trying to be someone he's not, trying to hit the ball farther, trying to hit the ball straighter off the tee, trying to do some things that would make him a more supposedly complete player that he just wasn't comfortable doing. And this year, he finally accepted that the best golf he plays is this crazy brand of golf where he makes mistakes, he tries hero shots and pulls them off, he makes putts from everywhere, he does stuff that frankly other golfers just can't or won't do, but that works for him. That's his path to victory. That's his path to success. And if he's willing to accept that, then he does well. And I think he has fully embraced that again this year. And once you kind of get on the roller coaster with Spieth, it's kind of hard to get off
once he gets
rolling.
Bryson DeChambeau has a lot of what he's done and brought the kind of attention that he's been bringing for outside fans with the way he's muscle bound, the way he's hitting it far. Is that dying down, or is that still a conversation piece at the PGA?
I think right now it's kind of in a lull. He kind of goes through these periods where he's trying to change something. He's trying to get faster or trying to figure something out. And he kind of, not like his speed for 3 years, but go out into the wilderness for a few weeks, fall off the leaderboard, and you go, well, I guess he hasn't figured out golf. I guess he hasn't broken it yet. And I think the reality is no one's ever going to figure out golf, but he's trying to figure out a way to be most effective in all of the things that he wants to accomplish. Well, he stunk in the Masters. That course clearly confounds him. This week, I think his trouble is the wind. If there is substantial wind each day, he prefers to hit the ball far by carrying it far. He doesn't hit it and then let it run very much. So putting his tee ball in the wind, and frankly all of his other shots into the wind, making them more susceptible, that's not typically a recipe for success in playing in the wind. So I don't love his chances this week, particularly if the wind picks up.
I would never tell somebody to change their thought process or personality. He seems to be scientifically inclined. That seems to be something he's happy about. That's sort of the marketability of Bryson DeChambeau in some of the ads where he's doing stuff on a whiteboard. But is there a concern that you could just get so bogged down in numbers that you're just kind of go out and play golf, use your God-given talent and win some tournaments?
Yeah, I think he spends a lot of time trying to pursue things, not that they don't matter, but that don't fundamentally change how he scores. He's trying to hit an 8-iron 200 yards where you go, dude, 190 is really good. Why are we chasing another 10? What's the problem with one TV? And I think he gets so consumed with the chase of what he's going after, whether that's speed, whether that's understanding data, whether that's working in the gym, that he gets sidetracked from what his actual job is, which is winning golf tournaments. But when he gets in there and he gets in the cauldron, he can do it. He closes really, really well once he gets into that situation. So I think it's kind of a push and pull, like you're talking about. Sometimes he just kind of gets sidetracked, and then you kind of have to rein him back in, and nothing reins you back in more than contending for a championship.
Last time they were there, Rory McIlroy won. He is now coming off a win at Quail Hollow. Obviously, his game's good, but Rory sort of had a lull, too. Where did Rory go for a while?
He took Sundays off, apparently, for the last couple of years.
Good line.
And that's just kind of how he has been. But I think his new commitment, he's working with a guy named Pete Cowan, one of the greatest golf teachers in the world, has his first new teacher really in his lifetime. And he's got him to work into a fade, which is really strange to watch Rory McIlroy hit a fade off the tee after watching him hit beautiful draws for forever. But it's working for him. He needs a control shot off the tee that doesn't go wrong when the pressure's on, and if he feels comfortable hitting a fade, like Dustin Johnson does, for that very same reason, then I think that makes him a stronger player on Sundays. It makes him more reliable. Now, if he can figure out the putting, that's going to work in his favor. I think this week, with past Palom being a slower grass, being a stickier grass, it's going to be harder to make a lot of birdies just putting them in. So that works for him because he gains more strokes tee to green than pretty much anybody else, and I think that's a large reason why he played so well in 2012, winning by eight.
Colin Morikawa was a guy a lot of people didn't hear of in the golf community. People knew of him, but the general public, he was a kind of a new star. Does the course conditions, the way it's designed, the way it's set up, is it likely we'll see another one of those, or will we see more of a familiar name win this thing based on what you assess the conditions and the course are for the big PGA?
I don't know so much that it's going to be the course. I mean, I think the course kind of creates a certain subset of players that go in, like we talked about earlier. But I don't think, if you look at the 2012 leaderboard, that it's completely out of place to think that someone who doesn't hit it 300 yards for every tee shot can win this golf tournament. Because if you look at the Englishmen who contended 9 years ago, none of them were long hitters by any stretch of the imagination. So I don't think the course necessarily dictates the kind of pull as much, I mean, to a degree. But I think of that pool, we've got a pretty wide-open field of contenders. The Victor Hovlands, Colin Morikawas of the world are playing great, great golf. They're just as likely to win a major as someone like Rory McIlroy, who has not won one in 7 years.
Yeah.
So we've got all kinds of different people who have – there's no one dominant player right now. And in 2021, we've had winners from all over the place. I mean, I could not have imagined talking to you at the PGA Championship and having Stuart Sink be a multi-time winner this season at 49 years old. So there's a lot of weird stuff happening out there, and I think that pool unto itself really is going to make it an interesting championship, because I don't know who actually I should like this week, because I think there are 20 guys I could like to win.
Ryan, always good talking to you. Really, really appreciate it. Have been appreciating it for years. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Tony.
You got it. Ryan Ballingy, golfnewsnet.com for all the latest in the golf world and PGA Championship coverage. Really good stuff. Very good, insightful. He's really insightful on this kind of thing as the PGA Championship underway. I'll give you a quick leaderboard update. Sure. Cameron Tringale at 2 under par after 6. Paul Casey, Ricky Fowler, Jimmy Walker, the 2016 champion, all at 1 under. John Daly had it at 1 under a little bit ago. The 1991 PGA champions. There you go. Little brief, small, short, little leaderboard from the opening holes of the PGA Championship. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.